You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of July 20. Well, I think it's the 25th today. I wrote the 23rd. It's 25th, 2017, and episode number 323. I don't even know what day of the week it is. Is it Tuesday? I think it's Monday. I don't know. This is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, and this week's news includes another Chicago Phantom story. And this week, he reaches the peak, or maybe it's a she. I don't know. I didn't look under the wings. Monkey business in Houston, Texas. SETI finds an alien signal close to Earth. And hashtag UFO Cornwall is hashtag PR flop. Breaking and entering for nothing. And we'll also have the book of the week. Conferences, conventions, and maybe a little mayhem. I don't know. We'll see. Having some interesting fun here in the chat room. Things don't seem to be working. People signing in, but we'll get all that fixed. We miss you if you're not in here. Always having fun in the chat room. And before I get too carried away about what's going on with the network, I want to let you know that this week's news is brought to you by the International Cryptozoology Museum, located in Portland, Maine. The International Cryptozoology Museum opened in 2003 and contains rare and original items collected by Lauren Coleman, the director of the museum. Visit the International Cryptozoology Museum now at 4 Thompson's Point Road, Suite 106. And for more information on the hours and what you can find there, please visit cryptozoologymuseum.com. And summer is winding down fast, so get out there. Get up to Portland, Maine, and visit the Cryptozoology Museum. I don't think I'm going to make it this year. Got too much on the plate, too much going on. Yeah, but we'll see. Maybe next year, maybe in the fall. I don't know. I'll figure something out. So some anomalous notes here. WCJV, this network that you're listening to the show on, has an app for any iOS device. That's for your iPhone, your iPad, as well as for any Android devices you may have. And when you download this app, you'll be able to listen to the show live, be involved in chat, and just be just listen to these shows. I mean, yeah, we don't have 80 or 90 shows on this network, but what we don't have in quantity, we certainly make up with quality. So get involved. WCJV, again, go to the App Store, go to the Android whatever the heck that we call it. I don't even know what we call it. The Play Store. And download the WCJV app today. Do it after the show. Don't do it now. Unless you're listening in on a computer, then you can download it to your phone. And speaking of WCJV, I want to let you know that it's also now available on iHeartRadio, as well as iTunes and a lot of other places. Just look for it. WCJV. I know that the Paranormal News Insider has been available on these and many other podcast sites, but again, now you can hear the whole lineup of WCJV on all the biggest platforms out there for podcasting. And WCJV is also available on SoundCloud, Mixcloud, YouTube, and again, probably a lot more platforms out there as well. And one personal notation, I talked about this last week, but in case you missed it, I officially published my sixth book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator. And yes, another spoiler alert. Tonight, I'm going to talk about this book as it's the book of the week, because I have that power to make it so. And let's see, events listings, talk about that real quick. Yes, I've updated the events. So if you're interested in going to a paranormal conference or convention, check out this list. Go to paranewsinsider.com. That's the official home of the Paranormal News Insider. From there, all sorts of links. You can get the up-to-date news. Check out the blog from Paranews Insider. Also, check out a handful of links, and you can listen to the show archives. All the links to everything, including the live chat room to WCJV, in case you want to listen to my show live every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. or any of the other shows right here at WCJVradio.com. Lots of information here, and I've done my best to make this list of events as inclusive as I can. I know there's probably a few I missed. That wasn't on purpose. Didn't mean to do that. I just only have so much time. And, you know, I do my best to check this every couple of weeks, try to look, try to search, but I can't find everything all the time. I do my best. But a lot of great people out there have sent me links and information to some of the shows that I've, or some of the events that I've missed. And I try to remember. Sometimes I forget, but I'll do my best to get these shows. Gosh, I keep saying shows. These events, conferences, conventions listed as quickly as I can. I know some stuff, it's a lot of work putting together one of these events, and that's why I like to list them. Not just that, but they're worthwhile. A lot of people don't like these things for one reason or another. And yeah, some of them can be pretty crappy for different reasons. But most of these are awesome. And I'll tell you, even though I've been in the anomalous fields for 20 years, I still learn things when I go to these events. And it depends on what you like. If you like ghosts, there's tons of ghost ones. If you like cryptids, there's not as many, but there's still some out there. And if you're into UFOs, well, there's a lot less, but there's still some quality ones out there, some really interesting ones out there, majority of which are tied into MUFON. And let's see, the St. Albans Sanatorium Paracon takes place this weekend in Radford, Virginia, the 29th. And what I'll be talking about here in a second, well, might as well talk about it now. The Kecksburg UFO Festival kicks off in just 3 days. Wow, I can't believe that's already here. July 28th through the 30th, 2017. That's where we're at. In Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. Let's see. There's nothing until August on my cryptozoology calendar there. But tell you what, this event coming up this weekend is going to be awesome. And I mentioned my book. Well, I'll have copies of my book, my new book, and all my books. I'm going to have to make more room on my table. That's 6 books. It's gonna be quite a stack. Yeah, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And last year, I got to go to this event, and I just had a table. I was just kind of soaking it all in, hanging out with Stan Gordon, Colin Schneider, and Ron Murphy was there, just kind of hanging out with people and having a lot of fun. It was a long weekend, but it was great because you had the time to actually have long conversations with people who had witnessed things or people had questions. You could spend quality time because you were there 2.5 days, which is fantastic. Now, Stan Gordon, who I just mentioned, was a guest on Colin Schneider's show last week, and he's kicking it off. He's the big guy there in that area, the researcher, and he's been tied to this Kecksburg UFO Festival since before it was actually a Kecksburg UFO Festival. It used to just be about the city, but now it's about the actual UFO event that happened in 1965. He's going to be talking about a look back at some of the best historical local UFO and Bigfoot cases and an update on more recent UFO, Bigfoot, and cryptid encounters from around the area. The second person up is myself. I'm going to be talking about the foundation of UFO research and investigation, kind of more or less based on the book that I just published. And Colin Schneider, who I just mentioned, who's the host of Crypto Kid Radio on Monday nights right here on WCJVradio.com. He's going to be talking about Cryptozoology 101, which is cool because that's what I've been talking about for, last 2-3 years. So it's good for me. I'm happy to move on and talk about UFOs a little bit and to get Colin's take on this. And, you know, I've got the opportunity to speak at Colin's school. He's a young kid. He's only 16. I don't know when he turned 17. I think he's going to be 16 forever, to be honest with you. But that was cool. And I've seen him at other events, like I mentioned Kecksburg last year and a couple of other events. But I've never had the opportunity to hear him speak and also to pretty much share the stage with him. I mean, he's on after I am. So that's going to be really cool. Looking forward to that. And it's going to be a big event for him, but he'll be all right. And the fourth person in this lineup this weekend, Ron Murphy. And I can't say enough about Ron Murphy. He's an excellent researcher, excellent folklorist. Really, really enjoy his presentations. Very professional, very super well researched, just like his books. Very good public speaker. And also the author of numerous books. I talked about a few here on the show over the course of the last, 91 shows I've been doing books of the week. And he's probably got a couple more coming up, I would say. Well, he's going to be talking about Unexplained World of the Chestnut Ridge, a hike through Western Pennsylvania's Goblin Universe. So that's the 2017 Kecksburg UFO Festival Conference lineup. Stan Gordon, myself, Colin Schneider, and Ron Murphy this weekend. That's only on Sunday. That's just a small portion, just a teeny weeny bit of this whole entire thing. This is a big event. Friday, I'm going to do my best. I have to work, but I'm going to, I'm off. But I'm not going to leave until, about 2:30 here. So I'll be squeaking to get there on time at 6 o'clock. And the doors open at 6, and we're open till 11. So it's going to be a late night. Grab a legendary burger, some French fries, or get ready for the hot dog eating contest. There's going to be a live band. We'll have all the craft shows, craft sales will be going on, woodworking, jewelry. The Kecksburg Volunteer Fire Department sells shirts with the event logo on it, which is pretty cool. I'll be wearing mine more than likely Friday. I know it's weird. I'm picking out my outfits. And all of us, hopefully all of us will be there. I know I'll be there. I'm not sure about Colin. I can't speak for those guys, but I'll definitely be there. New book in hand, waiting to meet and greet the people for the weekend. It's just an exciting weekend. That's just Friday. Saturday, there's a bed race. Now, I've been actually involved in a bathtub race before. I actually built the bathtub for the bathtub race. Never done a bed race. I don't think I'm going to do that one. I'm going to skip. I'm going to watch that one, I think. There's also a burnout. I'm not doing that one. I'm going to watch that one. That was a lot of fun last year. Took about 50 pictures of that. They chain a car or a truck, or even there was a couple of four-wheelers, to this ginormous cement block and let them spin their tires. That's what a burnout contest is. And whoever can make the most smoke or get the most cheers or blows their tires, they pretty much win. It pretty much goes from the crowd reaction, I think, if I remember last year. There's going to be a parade at 2 o'clock. I think I'm going backwards here. The hall opens at noon. We're up until 9 on Saturday. Saturday's still up. The parade is at 2 o'clock. And it rained last year, so the parade was going like 40 miles an hour down the road. The bed race is at 4. Smoke in the Valley Burnout Contest, 6 o'clock. And then there'll be a live band from 7 to 10. At 10 o'clock, fireworks. Fireworks. You gotta love fireworks. And then that's Saturday. Sunday, long day, noon to 9. We're open inside. Sunday, doors open. It says 12 a.m. I'm not getting there that early. I think that's noon. To 5 p.m., there's a hot dog eating competition at 12:30. I don't know. I might set that one out. The conference kicks off at 1 o'clock, again, with Stan Gordon. I'll be up at 2, Colin at 3, and Ron Murphy at 4 to round out this year's Kecksburg UFO Festival. Excited about this, can you tell? It's going to be a great time. Looking forward to this. Hopefully the weather is better than it was last year. A lot of rain. The parking lot was flooded. that wasn't fun. But the whole weekend was fun. It was a lot of fun. It was hot. And when it wasn't hot, it was wet. But we'll see this year. It's probably just going to be hot. Then let's see. A week after that, I'll be at the Strange Encounters of Pennsylvania event on August 5th. That's in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And then I get a little reprieve. August 19th is my next event. I'll be speaking at the Goose Project, the second Goose Project, the MS fundraiser paranormal convention. It's going to be at the Bell Nursing Home in Kimbolton, Ohio. It was supposed to be at the Prospect Place Mansion in Trinway, but he's moved the event to Kimbolton, Ohio, the Bell Nursing Home, which is cool. I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a really cool event. And again, if you have any information about any event that's not listed at paranewsinsider.com in the events tab, just shoot me an email. Let me know on social media. I also have a contact page at paranewsinsider.com that you can get a hold of me and let me know. And I'll try to talk about it here on the show. And I'll really, the best way to get me to talk about it is to, invite me to speak. I'd be glad to do that. So now we're going to jump into cryptid news, and we're going to talk about the Chicago Phantom again. He's back. He hasn't gone anywhere, I guess. I don't know. This is getting weird. Last week we talked about the Chicago Police Department. An unnamed source at the Chicago Police Department states that he and his partner observed this creature when people were pointing at it, and they took some witness testimony and turned in a police report. Have not heard back if anyone's gotten a hold of this police report. I personally have not yet tried to file for anything, but all you got to do is fill out this Freedom of Information Act form and send it to the Chicago Police Department. So I might be doing that just to get a hold, just to see what's going on, to see if that particular individual statement is actually true. And we can kind of go from there. But this one here, this week, the Chicago Phantom flying humanoid bat owl creature mothman wannabe thing. Yeah, he's back. This time, a witness was standing outside of a bar having a cigarette, which is weird because we had that one before. And I remember the bar was called The Owl. This one? I don't remember what it's called. The Franklin Tap, actually, is what it was called. The Franklin Tap. Having a cigarette. And around 5:10 p.m. local time on Monday, July 24th, he witnessed a figure almost at the top of the Willis Tower. And the Willis Tower used to be called the Sears Tower, and it took me a long time to not call it the Sears Tower, but it's now the Willis Tower. And he said the figure appeared to be about 6 feet tall, but he also described it as being crouched, which is kind of weird. I don't know how you can tell how tall something is when it's crouched, but okay. I'll take your word for it. It's what you saw. Can't argue with your perspective. The creature then jumped from the building and then flapped its wings as it started to sink, and then flew up and away in a northerly direction. And the description continues with the report, which says, quote, the witness states that the being's outstretched wings were not very large, maybe 6 to 8 feet from tip to tip, but were very jagged and insect-like, shaped similar to a moth. The being was also dark green in color and had a body form like that of a mantis. The legs seemed to be human-like and extended beyond the body while flying. And he called it a human, insect, and bird mix that seemed to mutate while in flight, unquote. That's direct quote there from the report, the article that was collected by Lon Strickler. And Lon's been doing a fantastic job keeping track of all of the sightings that have happened going all the way back to 2011 about this, what he's dubbed the Chicago Phantom. And other people have called it the owl-like humanoid or Chicago Mothman, whatever you want to call it. And Lon from this latest one is convinced that there may actually be three different creatures on the loose. I'm not sure. You know, I really haven't sat down and looked at and analyzed each report together. I'm just kind of looking at each one individually because the way I research it, I don't look at if there's 10 reports of one thing because some of them could be tainted. And you can't just say, well, there's been 23 reports of this creature, so therefore it has to be real because there's 23 reports. Yeah, it's highly unlikely that 23 people have mistaken a window washer or mistaken a giant bat. The odds seem to kind of go against that, but it's possible in a very large city like Chicago, and especially if some of these are not legit. People may have heard about this or saw this on Reddit or online somewhere else and may just, you know, be pulling somebody's leg just to try to get, I don't know, jollies. Is that what people get nowadays? I don't know. They're getting something from it. And I don't know. I'm not sure what to make of it, but it is interesting. And you really have to report on this until further information provides itself. I mean, you can't discredit it. But at the same time, I'm not jumping up and down and saying, this is definitively some sort of, I don't know, DNA, you know, physics-breaking creature that defies the laws of nature because it's a mixture of humanoid and bat and mantis and moth and all these other things that it's being described as. But, you know, I think, I don't know. I think you really have to look at Occam's razor and say it's probably more than likely not some sort of strange nature-defying creature. It's probably, you know, a combination of what I just said. Maybe misinterpretation at first, and now maybe people are just getting a little carried away. That's why it's important now to really analyze these sightings and go after these people. But I'm not interviewing them, so I really can't do that myself. But you know, Lon Strickler has been doing a fantastic job at interviewing these people, and I really feel that if something was up with this, pretty sure he would figure that out and kind of dismantle this pretty quickly. So I don't know, but either way, it's really, really interesting story that's evolving still up in Chicago, and it's been taking place since 2011, like I mentioned. That was only the first, I think, three reports. So number 4 through number 23 have taken place since March 22nd of this year. And it goes from March 22nd to April 7th, two on April 15th, one on April 16th, one on April 27th, one on May 5th, two on May 19th, two on May 27th, two on June 3rd, one on June 17th, two on June 23rd, and let's see, one on June 29th, one on June 30th, and now we have our first report of July on July 24th. And let me notate that, keeping notes on all this stuff, just so I can keep on track. And Lon Strickler's got a map. You've talked about this before, the Google Maps. Keeps track of all this stuff. Let me put that in the chat room real quick for you guys. Boom. There it is. There's the link in the chat room, and I'll be sharing that again during the week, as I typically do through Facebook. And that Facebook, my Facebook is, the Paranews Insider Facebook is tied into Twitter. So anything I publish through the Paranews Insider Facebook page, we'll go through Twitter at Paranews Insider and facebook.com/Paranews Insider. And let's see, let me throw the case you didn't see it. WCJV has been following the story pretty closely because I've been following it pretty closely. So if something breaks, WCJV is going to share the link way before I will. which is great because then you guys can get a little bit jumpstart on these things if you're following this. I don't know. It's really, 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 really weird. Really cool stories. And, you know, man, I just sit here and wait for the next event to happen. I didn't expect police to see this thing finally. And now it's going and jumping off the Willis Tower. Interesting stuff. So we're going to go from Chicago, sweet home Chicago, the Windy City, Chi-Town. We're going down to Florida. I don't really have a nickname for Florida. Maybe the armpit of the United States. I don't know. Well, I just lost all 10 fans I have in Florida. No, I love Florida. I do. I go there all the time. I love it down there. Anyway, before I bury myself into a C-note down there in Florida, last week I talked about the monkey business going on in the state of – actually, no. You know what? Let me backtrack here. We're not going to Florida. Forget it. We're going to Texas. I'm going to mention Florida. I did talk about that last week. Florida, where the rhesus monkeys chased a family. Yeah, that was last week. As well as the 250 pounds of deer feed. But that was an interesting story. This guy had 50, well, he counted what he thinks was 50 monkeys hanging out in his backyard, eating his deer feed. Well, this week, there are sighting reports and one attack report of a monkey in South Houston, Texas. We're going to be spending a little time in Texas tonight. The last story is also about Texas. I don't know, it's kind of reminiscing. I love Texas too. I love Florida. Don't get me wrong. I've spent a lot of time there lately, but probably spent more time in Texas than any other state other than Ohio. South Houston, before I get sidetracked again, is a city. It's kind of a, I don't want to call it a borough, but it's a city located inside of Houston. So it's Southeast Houston. And I'm going to go on a limb here and say that they're probably not well known for their wildlife. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure monkeys are not one of the top creatures you're going to see. Now, a man named Brian Beach was on his way to work when he spotted the monkey sitting on top of a car, which was occasionally jumping up and down on top of the car, having fun. And about an hour later, Mariah Schesling was in a truck with her grandfather, and she saw the monkey roll down a window to get a photograph of said monkey when it suddenly jumped into the truck. And as the monkey came into the truck, it began to scratch Mariah, and her grandfather, well, this is what she said, her grandfather punched the monkey right in the face, which then forced it out of the truck. Be careful doing that. Don't punch monkeys. Punching monkeys, that sounds like a good garage band name. So he punched this monkey and sent it flying, and well, there you have it. There's the attack. No word on if she's okay or there's anything wrong, or she's, I don't know, morphing into Super Monkey or something. I don't know. South Houston Animal Control and police are on the lookout for this monkey and are not sure if it's an escaped exotic animal or one that was accidentally or purposely released. They are worried that the monkey may be hiding out somewhere, but are also considering that the owner has hidden the monkey due to the popularity of the story on social media. And the laws on owning primates, believe it or not, are very wishy-washy pretty much anywhere, let alone Texas. And of course, you know, everything is bigger in Texas, so this must be a ginormous monkey. I don't think they even mentioned what type of monkey it was. I didn't have time to look up the picture, but I'm going to guess it was a rhesus macaque monkey. Those are pretty much the most popular monkeys that people own, very similar to also monkeys that are on the loose in Florida, which I mentioned. There's also an island off the coast of South Carolina, and there are also monkeys in the loose, on the loose, in the wild, in Texas. But they're pretty much self-contained because of being in West Texas. It's a little bit more arid and dry, and they're very dependent on humans for handouts and water and things like that. So they're not really traveling anywhere. So So, yeah, that's good. It's all good. Links in the chat room. Like I said, if you're in the chat room, you check out the chat room. You're going to get the links before everybody else. And not always the same links that you see all over the place on all these other all these new shows and everything that everybody does. I try to, again, I do research into some of these. So, I mean, yeah, some of them are the same ones, the same links. It's just a very simple, basic story. But if it's a little bit more complex, then I may do the research into this stuff and dig into it. Before I get into UFO news, it's the bottom of the hour, as they say in radio business. And I want to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And in case you missed it, last Monday night, Stan Gordon was the guest on Crypto Kid radio show hosted by Colin Schneider, who, again, is a very young up-and-coming cryptozoologist. And next week's guest, somebody that I've already talked about, next week, Lon Strickler from Phantoms and Monsters and the man behind the name Chicago Phantom will be the Crypto Kid's guest. Looking forward to that, what Lon has to say about what's going on up there in Chicago. And tomorrow night, Wednesday night, you can catch Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson as she talks with Greg Pollitt and Noah Moisel from the Paranormal Nights investigation team. And I apologize if I hack their names. Again, that's Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, right here on WCJVradio.com. That's Wednesday night. And let's get to UFO news. Now, this is kind of a tricky story here. I wasn't really going to talk about this. I don't know. Just really didn't seem like it was going to be a big deal. Kind of already knew what was going to happen. And it really didn't pick up that much steam in either the media or in social media immediately. But now all of a sudden, for some strange reason, well, just a few days ago, it got popular again. So, well, I guess it's time to talk about this story. And it actually goes back to May 19th. Researchers for SETI, which is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, picked up an unusual signal coming from a planet known as Ross 128, a red dwarf star located about 11 light years from Earth. The signal was discovered by the Arecibo Radio Telescope in Puerto Rico on July 14th. The telescope was again pointed at Ross 128, where the sound was heard once again. And the 10-minute signal was observed for 10 minutes, and it seemed to be very sporadic, kind of random. Researchers were doubtful this was an alien signal, but they decided to try again to see what the signal might be, which is now dubbed, they gave it a name. It's dubbed the Weird Signal. The Weird Signal. It's hard to do with an exclamation point. Weird Signal. Very similar to the Wow Signal that was pretty much torn apart by Antonio Paris earlier this year. Still doing more research on that, though. Don't give up on that. On July 16th, researchers once again heard the signal coming from Ross 128 and analyzed the data once again. Abel Mendez, an astrobiologist at the University of Puerto Rico at Arecibo, was one of the researchers and a spokesperson for the released information to the public, where it was stated that, quote, "The best explanation is that the signals are transmissions from one or more geostationary satellites. This explains why the signals were within the satellite frequencies and only appeared and persisted in Ross 128. The star is close to the celestial equator where many geostationary satellites are placed," unquote. So a geostationary satellite is a satellite that's, give or take, about 22,000 miles above the surface of Earth, and it's stationary, so it stays over the same place. So It's over the same part of the sky all the time. And that's why whenever they point the satellite towards this Ross star, that they're getting the same signal consistently. Man, these high orbit satellites, they cause all kinds of havoc for this kind of stuff. And just they don't know that it's exactly this, but it's all signs are pointing to it being a geostationary satellite, which is unfortunate. But it's, again, it's something that I kind of thought might occur with this. It's kind of why I didn't get all excited about it. But then the story started picking up steam right after the July 14th evidence, and all kinds of conspiracy theorists websites were talking about this thing. Like, oh, SETI found a signal. Well, they did, but they didn't all at the same time. So let me kick that into poof. There it is, right there in the chat room for you guys. And we're going to stay, well, we'll stay with the, well, I got to talk about this story. Let's just talk about it. UFOs again. And this has been really picking up steam in the news. A really quick story that's just been taking place since July 17th. And it's pretty much come crashing to a conclusion already, although some people are kind of behind on this information. A strange series of videos has the attention of folks in Cornwall, England, as well as UFO video collection sites all over the world. In the videos, a strange black blob is seen morphing as a ball that some say looks like a swarm of bugs or birds. The video started showing up on Monday, July 17th, as a surfer along the Cornish coast named Kiefer Krishnan. Another cool name, Kiefer Krishnan. That's pretty cool. Kiefer Krishnan. Brian Beach was the other one. That's pretty cool too. I like that name. But Kiefer Krishnan posted a video to his Instagram account, which is now gone. He took it down. A photographer named Shane House got a video of the UFO while driving on the A30 freeway, also on Monday, and quickly posted his sighting to Twitter with the hashtag UFO Cornwall. A man named Harry Wild, another cool name, also spotted the strange black blob in the sky, videotaped it, and uploaded it to Twitter with the hashtag UFO Cornwall. Another three sightings occurred on Tuesday, July 18th, which appeared on Twitter. And yes, all three had the hashtag UFO Cornwall. And if you didn't notice a trend by then, you were lost. People were quick to dismiss these videos as just random videos of bee swarms or possibly starlings or other birds. But again, there's always two sides. Many people felt these were definitely UFOs invading England, or some sort of strange morphing otherworldly thing. I don't know. Another dimension or something. I don't know. People get a little carried away sometimes. Now, some were smart enough to realize that the hashtag UFO Cornwall was being used when the first few people didn't seem to know that others had already seen it or reported it. That should have been a big hint to a lot of people out there. I know when I saw it, I kind of was like looking like, wait a minute, how is this picking up steam? How are they already using this hashtag? That's just kind of, that's a huge coincidence. Now, UFOofinterest.org put things together by realizing the first five witnesses, all people that reported actual videos also at the same time. And here we are, 23 reports into the Chicago Phantom and not a single picture. But all of a sudden, five people see this UFO and videotape it and upload it to Instagram, Twitter, I don't know where else. All five people, UFO Interest, UFOofinterest.org, I should say, put things together. They realized that the first five witnesses were all people involved in digital communication and marketing. Ding, ding, ding. Should be a red flag right there. Trudy Holden, couldn't find my real bell, so I had to improvise. Trudy Holden, the fourth person to upload a video, spilled the beans the following day when she tweeted, quote, okay, I'm a big UFO tricker. It's all a little fun for At Eden Project, Awesome Space Expedition, or Exhibition. I think I spelled that wrong. Exhibition, but I'm still a believer, unquote. Now you'd think, okay, end of story. This person said, admitted that it was just part of an elaborate hoax, PR campaign, and that's it. It's over, right? It's done. People are going to blog about that. The story is out. People are talking about this story, and that's it. It's over, right? Not so fast. A representative for the Eden Project, which does have a new exhibit called Journey into Space, starting at the end of July, stated, quote, "It's true. We have a galaxy of ways to tell the story of space at Eden this summer. To coin a phrase, the truth is out there," unquote. Well, first of all, you can't coin a phrase that's already popular in the culture. It's been used in the context of aliens and UFOs for over 20 years, thanks to the X-Files. Secondly, this vague answer, again, thought it was over. But this vague answer has many people believing that the Eden Project might not have anything to do with these sightings and that these people are still speculating. Whoops. Way to ruin a viral marketing effort. Time and effort out the window because you didn't, you know, admit it. You didn't just come out and say, hey, we did it. It's our fault. And, you know, get the exposure, you know. There's no such thing as bad advertising anymore, it seems like. No matter what you do, you're still going to get your name out there and people are going to be attracted to your cause or whatever you got. And since that's the end of UFOs, that brings us to the Book of the Week. And the Book of the Week, proud to say the Book of the Week this week, is my book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator. And let me put the picture of this. Well, put the picture of the book in the chat room. Not seen it. Well, there it is. And away we go. So Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator is the sixth book I've published. And it comes on the heels of the Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist, which I first published in 2014 and did a second edition in 2015. And this book, it's very similar to that, but again, UFOs, it's a different, obviously it's different than cryptozoology, it's different than ghosts, so it's a different kind of beast, it's a different kind of animal. And I put the link in the chat room there for the book. It's not yet available through Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or anybody else right now, but you can get it through my self-publishing page. If you go to ParanewsInsider.com, right there on the front page, right there on the homepage, I give a little blurb about myself at the first paragraph there, and I mentioned that I'm an author of six books. If you click on where it says six books, it'll take you right to the home of my six books. A couple of them are also ebooks. And that'll take you to lulu.com, lulu.com/spotlight/ghost help. And that's where all my books are located as of now. You also go to briandparsons.com. All my books are listed there as well. So right now you can only get it through there, but eventually you're going to get it through Amazon. It takes a couple of weeks. And it'll be everywhere, trust me. Now, again, cryptozoology, that book was Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist, was easy to write because I was able to balance out the stories. It's a lot harder to do in UFOs because the UFO stories or crashes or whatever are part of the folklore. So when you kind of go against it, it's kind of going against UFO culture. And there is so much involved with UFOs versus cryptozoology. Cryptozoology is either, do you believe in Bigfoot? Do you believe in the Loch Ness Monster? Do you believe in Chupacabra? And all the other creatures individually. That's pretty much it. mean, there's not a whole lot. I mean, some people try to make a little bit more out of it by adding conspiracy theories and stuff, but that's not part of popular culture. That's just part of the fringe culture of all this. But when you get into UFOs, I mean, my goodness, you have abductions, mutilations, crop circles, conspiracy theories, crashes, reversed engineered technology, all sorts of stuff related to UFO and alien culture. So it's very complex. It's very diverse. It's very, it's a little bit more difficult to describe. And did my best to just keep this book simple. I did kind of get carried away with some of these parts, but try to keep it formatted in the very simplistic way because it is a handbook for amateurs. And talked about in the first part, basic sightings, basic reports, talked about a thing called cultural tracking. And cultural tracking is essentially taking a sighting or taking a report and having it reflect the culture in which that report appeared. So the Romans, the Greeks would describe a chariot of fire in the sky, would describe them holding spears, would describe horses leading these chariots of fire around in the sky. So that's how they saw it. In the late 1800s, they saw cigar-shaped objects, which is exactly the technology that was new at the time, with blimps and dirigibles, those types of craft. And then we get into the flying saucer era in the 1940s, and now we're into glowing balls of light. Spears is seemingly the big thing. And in the 80s and 90s, you had triangles. So kind of reflective of the culture of the time. Also in part one, I had to do it. I had to talk about it. It's a very important part of the culture of UFOs. I did tackle ancient aliens. I had to. It was just going to be something I was going to mention in a chapter, but I got a little carried away and made it its own chapter. I go into some pretty good depth that I think would actually might even impress Ron Murphy. I don't know. Pretty deep in the research there in of the ancient alien stuff. It's not that hard to really disprove some of that stuff, but if you think that ancient alien things are true, read this book. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying look at what I'm providing you. Just kind of a counter argument, just providing you some information with some resources. Just read it, check it out. I'm not telling you you're wrong. I'm not saying you're right. I'm just giving you the information. That's what I do throughout this book. I also talk about crashes, conspiracy theories, and a lot of the other aspects that I've already mentioned, abductions, mutilations, crop circles, and so forth. Part two digs into the culture, because the culture of UFOs and aliens is far bigger than the culture of anything else. I mean, ghosts are pretty close because of the white sheet, which is a burial thing, and just some of the nuances of ghosts, tied into folklore as well. But UFOs is highly, highly crafted by culture. I mean, think about it. Dozens of movies just this year, just 2017 alone, are based on aliens, Guardians of the Galaxy. There you go. Most of these comic book movies are based on that. The Batman, Superman, all that stuff, based on aliens. Star Wars, based on aliens. Lots of movies. And if you just step back and realize how many movies, and I'm just talking movies, are based on aliens, it's incredible. And that shapes how we view aliens, or shapes how we view UFOs. And this goes way back. Books in the 1800s, War of the Worlds, which went on to be a radio show that scared a lot of people, created a lot of panic in the 1930s. And then you had comic books. Comic books shaped the minds of children about UFOs and aliens. TV shows, again, movies, tons of movies. Probably more movies made about aliens than there ever has been about cryptids. Even if you add the Sharknadoes into that. And ghosts. I'll challenge you. Ghosts and cryptids combined You can throw in Godzilla. You can throw in King Kong. Perfectly fine with that. Versus the UFO genre. I don't think you can match that. UFOs and aliens, far more cultural representations than ghosts and cryptids combined. I would really say that it is. Also in that chapter, provide some logical solutions to UFOs, different things. I talk about hoaxes. And if you've ever heard me talk about anything, do any presentations, I talk about 6 keys to success. I also did this in the cryptid book. Very simple way to kind of talk about the whole subject matter. Kind of just to kind of summarize it real quick. Leading into the casework part 3, where I do talk about casework and actually define what a UFO is. And think about this. I'll just mention this. UFO stands for unidentified flying object. Does not mean anything about aliens or extraterrestrials or aircraft from outer space. But when you hear the word UFO, we tend to imagine and think of aliens, and we put it together. We think of alien-powered craft or alien-originated craft. But really, UFO itself just means unidentified flying object. And it originated actually by the Air Force, of all people. The United States Air Force defined this. And I think it was back in 1954, August something, 1954. It was actually the Air Force that invented this term. And they didn't have alien-powered spacecraft. Now, they did kind of somewhat get around to that, because it was a craft that seemingly defied the technology of the time. So they kind of went around that a little bit, but didn't come right out and say that it's alien-powered spacecraft. Talk about SETI. I talk about MUFON. I talk about all these other acronyms of research involved, which kind of ties all the cultural things together. And then we get into the interview process, and I do a very thorough interview process. Some people don't like that, but it's important. If you don't understand the people that you're talking to, you don't understand the individual case, how can you really investigate? How can you really research a case when you don't really get the information you can get from a witness? Because sometimes, some cases, a witness is your only piece of evidence. It's your best piece of evidence. And they may have a picture, but the picture may be circumstantial, may not have anything to actually do with their sighting. So again, the witness is your best evidence. So you have to really dig into that evidence, which is your witness. I talk about the cognitive interview and some methods that I've created over the years of interviewing people. Then we get into the on-site investigation, off-site research, and of course, a list of resources. It's a very handy book, and it's not meant to be the end-all, be-all book if you're going to get into UFO research and investigation. Again, it's a launching point, just like my handbook for the amateur cryptozoologist was, and just like all the ghost books, the 4 ghost books I wrote. Those are just launching points. I'm not trying to mean like I know everything and I'm trying to write everything you need to know. But these are very balanced books. I'm not trying to be a hardcore skeptic. I am skeptical, because you have to be. If you're going to get into a fringy topic like UFOs, you have to have a lot of skepticism. You have to be very skeptical of this stuff. If you're a true believer, that's fine. You can learn how to become a little bit more balanced. But you have to be careful with these things. You have to be careful when you believe too much or you're too wishful on these subjects. It's really hard to investigate and research when you can't find a balance in all this stuff. So Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator by Brian D. Parsons is the book of the week this week. And again, not available yet on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any other online booksellers, but it is available through my personal website. It's to paranewsinsider.com. You can find the link there at the top, briandparsons.com. Click on books, and it'll take you to the link right there. One last story I want to talk about here, kind of near and dear to me, because it happened in a place that I'm extremely familiar with, not the actual building, but the city. Brings back a lot of memories. And we've already talked about monkey business in South Houston, Texas. But now about a little B&E? That's breaking and entering to all you people that don't watch CSI or any other cop shows. In Bryan, Texas, spelled differently, not B-R-I-A-N. It's B-R-Y-A-N. And before I get into the story, let me just real quick. Out of anywhere I've ever been in Texas. Now, Texas is a huge state. Huge. Not as big as Alaska, I know. Of anywhere I've ever been in Texas, Texarkana, Marshall, Madisonville, Nacogdoches, Crockett, Dallas, Fort Worth, Granbury, Waco, Glen Rose. Glen Rose, by the way, is home of the Dinosaur Valley State Park. Really cool. You can see dinosaur prints embedded in rock. Really cool. Cameron, Texas, where I made my debut on the radio. Austin, San Antonio, the cities of Buda, which is B-U-D-A, which is home of the Salt Lick. If you ever go to Texas and you're between Austin and San Antonio, go to Buda, go to Salt Lick, the best food you will ever have, I promise you. San Marcos, not Marcos. It's spelled S-A-N-M-A-R-C-O-S, but it's San Marcos, okay? Now, I can't talk about why I visited this city on the air, so we'll skip that one. New Braunfels. That's where my best friend's family lives. Austin. Did I already mention San Antonio? Probably did. Jolotes, Laredo, South Padre Island, Mustang Island, Corpus Christi, Galveston, Katy, Houston, Snook, Caldwell, Dimebox, Shiner. Shiner is home of Shiner Bock beer. Great beer. Bock beer, it's dark. You got to have a taste for it, but it's fantastic stuff. Bryan and College Station, probably dozens of other cities I can't remember off the top of my head. You ever hear the song, I've Been Everywhere? Yeah. Well, there's a cover of this. A guy named Brian Burns, who I got to hang out with once, covers this song. It's called I've Been Everywhere in Texas. Sounds just like that. All these cities named off. Pretty cool stuff. Probably remember a guy named Johnny Cash did that song. Well, anyway, out of all the places I've been to in Texas, College Station, probably number one. Followed very closely by Bryan, Texas, which is they're right next door to each other. They're pretty much like almost like the same city, pretty much. College Station is home to Texas A&M University, where my best friend went to school to get his 4-year degree. Probably, I think it took him 7 years. That's just the way it is, though. Too much partying, but a lot of fun along the way. Anyway, Bryan, Texas is home to the Bowie Elementary School, which is all this stuff just for this little story here. I got carried away. Sorry. A local group of ghost hunters, you guessed it, decided to investigate a purportedly haunted school. Well, the big problem is they didn't have permission. They broke in and entered illegally. Don't do it. According to Bryan, Texas, the Eagle Online, great newspaper, quote, in January, several teams carrying a Ouija board were caught inside the school and arrested by Bryan police. On Wednesday, three men and a woman, not three men and a baby, all in their 20s, were taken to jail after entering the property, unquote. Now, Randall Spradley, who is one of the three investors who own the property holding the 115-year-old building, 115 years old, got to be haunted, right? It's in Texas. Got to be haunted. Well, he states that the building is not haunted, and the stories surrounding a purportedly tragic history within the building have no documentation to back them up. Spradley states that he spent significant time in the building and states that it's not haunted. It's not haunted. He's never seen a ghost, never experienced a ghost. And again, the purported haunted history has no documentation. So on Wednesday, July 19th, the four ghost hunters, I'll call them ghost hunters. I don't like that term, but that's what they were, pulled back some plywood and entered the building illegally. Spradley states that it gets very expensive having to fix the damage continuously, and police are frequently called to the location, and they're kind of pretty much getting a little annoyed with that. He also states that parts of the building are very dangerous due to damaged ceilings and floors. Spradley and his fellow investors are underway with plans to renovate the property into an apartment complex, but aim to keep the property historically significant by replacing upgrades that were put in during the 1970s with designs from the early 1900s. Pretty cool. Which would gain the property a historical preservation tax credit. So the lesson here is, and I don't know the fate of these three men and a woman, but I'm imagining it's probably not pretty good. You don't want to do it. Don't risk it. And it's funny too, because if you know anything about ghosts in San Antonio, one of the biggest stories in San Antonio is the purported haunted railroad tracks, where the little babies are these kids that got killed in the school bus crash, put their hands on a bumper and supposedly push a car over the tracks. Well, yeah, no bus ever crashed at those railroad tracks or anywhere near that area ever. So that story is bogus. It still perpetuates, even though a lot of people have written about it and talked about it. It's not true. And somebody thought that somebody said that because it was keeping people off the tracks or out of that area. But no, it's not true. Neither is this one about the Bowie Elementary School. But again, people get this local folklore. They hear these local stories, and they just want to go in there and see for themselves. But you know what? That's all fine and dandy, but it's not worth getting arrested. It's not worth it. If you have any sort of passion for doing this, I don't care, even if you're an enthusiast or you want to get a thrill from it, that's fine. But don't give the people that enjoy doing this, even as just a hobby, let alone people that like to be researchers or that help people through cases, don't give us a bad name. Stop it. It's illegal. It's illegal, and it's stupid. It's very dangerous. Spradley's, I think he said pretty much that he's surprised that no one's been injured through all of the break-ins that have occurred there. And the police are getting really, really annoyed with this. So don't do it. Don't do it there. Don't do it anywhere. We've heard many, many stories here on this show and throughout time about people breaking and entering into places, some having very tragic consequences, not just with ghosts, but even cryptids. The girl who fell from the train trestle and died. People that broke into the church and set the church on fire, burned down a historic church. Don't do stuff like that. That's just nuts. I don't care if you're high. I don't care if you're playing with your Ouija board. Do it on your own property. Okay, end rant. I feel better. Thank you. It's therapeutic. Let's see. One last thing I got to do. Got to enter something in here. Oh, no. I did. Oh, there it is. Okay. Well, that's my outro picture for the week. I gotta get more. I think I'm out. Anyway, big thanks again to Cindy, my producer. I can't believe an hour is over already. You guys want to do another hour? No, it's okay. Big thanks to Cindy, my producer, for everything that she does behind the scenes. To Dita and Paul for their help in the chat room, as always. I thought I saw Paul in there. Well, maybe he's not. I thought he was. Maybe it was his ghost. I know he creeps in there every now and again. Everybody in the chat room for being in there. I see Walt. I see my little magic eye. I see Jim Mallard of the Mallard Report. TMR247.com. Check out his show tonight. Walt Wadsworth, I see you in there. Big thanks to everybody in the chat room. Anybody who's listening anywhere else, live tonight or otherwise, any other night. Remember, you can listen to the Paranormal News Insider and the rest of the WCJV Digital Broadcasting Network shows on their own WCJV app. So go to the Play Store, go to the Android, whatever the heck they are. You know what they are, the App Store and the Play Store. Download the WCJV app in 2 minutes when the show's over. Do it. Get it. It's cool. And also, if you you don't want to use the app, okay, fine. I get it. Your phone doesn't hold that much stuff. Download iTunes. WCJV is on iTunes. That is cool. You know how hard it is to get on iTunes? It's not easy. iTunes, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, MixCloud, YouTube, and a lot of other podcasting apps that I don't have time to mention. Look it up. You'll love the great programming. I've mentioned it, talking about it tonight on the show. Get it. Anyway, enough of that. I'll see you next week. But for now, well, I don't know. Maybe I'll see you during the weekend. See you out in Kecksburg. I'll see you next week regardless. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, you know it. Don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.